You are Locked On NBA, your daily NBA podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Thursday edition of Locked On NBA, David Locke along with the Washington Post NBA writer Ben Golliver. The league did not disappoint tonight, Ben Golliver. Wow. If I get a Wednesday night without a game and I get to sit around without prepping because I don't have a game tomorrow, I want nine games generally like this one, this night.
No, it's an amazing situation we've got developing in the NBA right now. A lot of the headlines people are arguing about, should there be an all-star game? What's up with the national anthem? What's going on with Kevin Durant and the protocols? And meanwhile, the game action has actually really, really cranked up. And so I don't want people to get distracted from that. I mean, incredible, last possession games featuring the Lakers, featuring the Bucks, featuring the Hawks tonight. I mean, pretty much anywhere you want to look, you got one right down to the wire. A lot of fun tonight.
I would like to congratulate the Chicago Bulls because an Eastern Conference team actually beat a Western Conference team tonight. Okay. Otherwise, the nightly whitewash that is the West throttling the East generally continued tonight. I think it was 5-1 West to East. It's 64% right now. It's huge. And we're in the higher percentage of games are non-conference games than ever before in the history of the league.
No, I mean, look at Cleveland. They're going on a five-game road trip west. They had a shot against Phoenix in game one, and I started to think, uh-oh, what's the rest of this trip look like? Because they didn't take care of business in that one. They come out tonight against the Nuggets and get pulverized by 38 points. So, I mean, it's going to be a long rest of the trip, I think, for them. You start that trip around 500, you're not going to end that trip around 500, I'll say that.
All right, let's start with the Phoenix 125-124 win over Milwaukee. I feel terrible here, Ben. I really feel terrible. Giannis has 47 points, 11 rebounds, 5 assists. He's a genius all night. He dunks with 48 seconds left on a beautiful drive to the basket. He actually made a free throw with 2:20 left on another beautiful drive to the basket. And yet somehow I'm left with the turnover late where Crowder pulls the chair on him. And the fact that he's left with a 20-foot jump shot at the buzzer, which he makes 36% of the time, and I left the game wondering still about Giannis. Is that fair on my part?
Well, I think on the last possession, yeah, you're right to look at that shot and say, hey, you know, if you compare him to his peers, right, a LeBron James, a Kevin Durant, a Kawhi Leonard, or even guys who are in this particular game, a Chris Paul, a Devin Booker, even a Chris Middleton, there's a lot of guys who would rather take that particular shot than Giannis. What confused me is why the ball ended up in his hands. You look down in the corner, Chris Middleton's wide open. He's actually been a guy they've gone to regularly in late game situations this year. It seemed like he was the obvious person to be looking at when you're in that time score situation down one with only a few seconds. That's my first look. I mean, Chris Middleton's basically been a 50-40-90 guy this year. He's had an awful lot of big shots over the course of his career. Try to get him the ball. It looked to me the way they designed it that Giannis was almost the outlet option. You know, he was back by half court, and I don't know exactly why they went there. I think it is indicative, though, for Milwaukee. They had an awful lot of blowout wins last year, and they've had a fair number of blowout wins this year. They just have not played in very many close games, and they don't look particularly comfortable or execute that well on offense when they do get into those late-game situations. We saw it last year in the bubble playoffs. Now, granted, there's a lot of new faces on this roster this year. They still don't play very many close games, and I just think it kind of showed through here tonight. Give Phoenix a lot of credit for their execution down the stretch. Now, there's a couple missed jumpers that they probably wish they could have back, but Booker hit a couple of really tough contested shots from the left side of the court right over Chris Middleton, one of the best, you know, perimeter defenders in the league in isolation. So it's one of those where you just kind of tip your hat to Phoenix, I think.
Wild game. Back and forth, kind of generally even till midway through the second. Then all of a sudden, Milwaukee took off. And like at halftime of this game or right before it, you're thinking, wow, they are just way better than everyone else in the East. Like that was my thought. Like, okay, they're back. And then Phoenix just kind of whittled away. And then all of a sudden, late in the third, went on like about an 18-2 run, I think it was. Phoenix is then in control. Milwaukee works their way back, and Phoenix gets the final play. You're right, by the way, on Milwaukee. I don't believe this has been updated. They're 2-6 now in games are within 5 points in the final 5 minutes. So that's a little bit of a concern. This is the kind of win that Phoenix got Chris Paul for. I think he ends up with 12 fourth quarter points tonight. Might have only been 10, but let's give Chris Paul for age. He gets an extra two, just bonus points for just generally existing. He had 10 points, two assists, no turnovers in the fourth quarter. Devin Booker was terrific, but this is why they got Chris Paul.
Yeah, he had a key steal too late. Let's not shortchange him on that one. You know, Dante DiVincenzo, I think, was kind of cutting towards the basket, getting in the paint. And Chris Paul knew where DiVincenzo wanted to go before DiVincenzo did just a classic smart vet play. Gets the steal, comes up, saves a possession. I mean, it looked like it was going to be a layup, and all of a sudden Chris Paul intervened. You know, he was, missing earlier in action, I think, from this, from their game earlier this week. It's great to see him back on the court, and he stepped up big time. And they do look very solid. I think they're still trying to get that two-man dynamic going on offense between Chris Paul and Devin Booker. I believe this was the first time they said on the broadcast both of those guys have scored 25 points in the same game. I think that says, you know, something about the function that, you know, Chris Paul views himself as more of a pass-first guy on this particular roster. But I think they could be really deadly if both those guys are scorers and feeling comfortable and striking the right balance. And they were able to do that night in a big-time way. Milwaukee's defense, to me, showed some real, breakdowns. And I think that they were exploited by those Phoenix guards. I mean, they were getting some wide-open shots for their supporting cast members. Frankly, you know, I think if Phoenix had shot the ball a little bit better, they could have, you know, run up even more on Milwaukee during that run that you're talking about.
It's another night where the three-point shot gets Milwaukee a little bit, not as much as some others, because Phoenix only took 31 shots from three, but they go 5 of 9 in the fourth quarter when they need to hold on. They got those looks. Milwaukee's defense has always been this defense. It allows you to shoot the three, but they don't let you get to the rim. As the league is getting better and better at shooting threes, you have to wonder whether that is not going to work out as well for them. They're the 10th ranked defense in the league this year, which is a pretty far drop from where they once were a few years ago, last year and the year prior, frankly, not even a few years ago. So I wonder a little bit, you know, they have kind of made this their bed in allowing teams to shoot threes. They're still 24th in the league at that. I wonder whether as this league gets better at three-point shooting, whether that turns out to be a problem for them.
Yeah, and look, this wasn't a case where, like, guys were just hitting crazy, super tough shots, and so you have to live with it. I mean, there was shooters wide open getting really good looks in the fourth quarter, and it was just defensive breakdowns. Guys weren't rotating. Guys weren't getting up high enough. It wasn't a case where Milwaukee was trying to dare guys to shoot. They were just randomly hitting them. I mean, there was, you know, a lot of wide open shots here, and they do have to figure that out because that will be, you know, the critical factor, I think, for them. I mean, to me, that's sort of their X factor, and then on offense, how well can they execute down the stretch? We should give them credit. Before that last play, they had some really good clutch offense. I mean, pick and rolls with Chris Middleton and Giannis were getting lots of points. It was better than some of the clunky stuff we've seen at times from Milwaukee, you know, in the past. So I do think they're starting to figure things out a little bit on that end. They just need to know exactly where they want to go with the game on the line.
Lakers Thunder was a good finish. We'll jump all over that one. Clippers and the Wolves played in the West, but let's stay on the East. The Nets lost a terrible game the other night to Detroit. Let's go to Locked On Nets for a report on what happened tonight against Indiana.
And that, my friends, is how you respond to a bad game against the Detroit Pistons. Adam here with the Locked On Nets podcast. Brooklyn taking down the Pacers with relative ease, came out with the focus, the energy, specifically on the defensive end of the floor that you wanted to see. Communication was high. You got a good performance out of DeAndre Jordan. Turned back the clocks for the big man at the five. Really gave you a complete performance. And then Kyrie leads the way. This is one of the biggest margins of victory and biggest leads that the Brooklyn Nets have had in franchise history going all the way back to 2002. Kyrie 17 of 17, excuse me, from the line in this one. Just a fantastic overall performance. Step yourselves back from the ledge, Brooklyn Nets fans. We're going to be just fine. Check out the Locked On Nets podcast right here on the Locked On Podcast Network.
Well, if one side is backing off the ledge, then that often means the other side is stepping toward the ledge. Let's go to Tony East. The Pacers have lost four in a row.
The Indiana Pacers fall 104-94 in Brooklyn to the Brooklyn Nets. I'm Tony East, the host of Locked On Pacers, here to break down what the heck just happened, because the Pacers scored 30 points in the first half of that game. They ended up scoring more than 30 in the third and fourth quarters. but the damage was already done. They were down over 30 points at halftime. They were down as many as 36 at one point in this game. The Nets just totally destroyed them start to finish. The final score is not indicative of how terrible the Pacers played in this game. And that was their fourth straight loss. The Pacers are now under 500. For the first time this season, they did not get any production from their two all-star candidates, Domantas Sabonis and Miles Turner. And this Pacers team is really struggling to score. They've scored 95 on Sunday and 94 today. They really need to figure something out and get something going because this four-game losing streak cannot continue much longer. They're barely out of the play-in tournament. They're not going to get Caris LeVert or TJ Warren back for a while. They really need to find a way to win some games, and tonight was not encouraging. Come check out Locked On Pacers, where we break down the Pacers' struggles and where they can improve.
He kind of only went sort of over the edge. All right, well, that's a big one for the Brooklyn because losing to Detroit's bad.
Yeah, everybody takes the losses to Detroit so hard. I feel like that's when people panic the most. But Detroit's actually beaten a bunch of good teams this year. I mean, they're kind of sneaky. If you overlook them, and they're easy to overlook, they will make you pay. But like the podcaster mentioned, I mean, really solid bounce back win for Brooklyn. Very stable. It was over within, 12 to 16 minutes. And Kyrie goes nuts. And anytime Brooklyn's getting that kind of production from him, they're very, very happy.
Crazy, crazy finish in the Hawks and the Mavericks. Some real questions about Trae Young in that game. We'll talk about that. Lakers and Thunder go to overtime, third straight overtime. For the Lakers, we've got Locked On Nows and the Clippers and Cats return as well. We'll get to all that as we continue here on the Locked On NBA podcast. You know what time it is? What time is it, Ben Golliver?
Rock Auto time. Gotta be.
It is. You bet. It is Rock Auto time. Because if you are a car aficionado like Ben Golliver, or a do-it-yourselfer like me, or none of the above, like neither of us are, rockauto.com still treats you right. It's a family business serving auto customers online for 20 years. rockauto.com will shop your auto body parts for hundreds of manufacturers. They have everything from engine control modules to brake parts to tail lamps to motor oil, even new carpet. Whether it's your classic or daily driver, whether it's a car you just fiddle around with on the weekends, whatever you need, it's a few easy clicks away. Deliver directly to your door. RockAuto.com. Old school, unique, easy catalog to navigate. And most importantly, the same price for professionals as it is for do-it-yourselfers. So why spend up to twice as much going to some brick-and-mortar store to get yourself pay twice as much with less selection? That seems like a really bad idea. So go to rockauto.com right now. See all the parts available for your car or truck. Write Locked On in their How'd You Hear About Us section. Please do that. Write Locked On in the How'd You Hear About Us section. It's Rock Auto. Amazing selection. Reliably low prices. All the parts your car will ever need. rockauto.com. David Locke along with Ben Golliver. Locked On Today is your new daily podcast. 20 minutes on everything going on in sports, updating you on everything you need to know. All right, before we get to the Lakers and their performance tonight and the win over the Thunder in their third straight overtime game, let's find out about how the other LA team did, and let's get a report from Locked On Clippers.
What's going on, Clippers fans? Chuck Mockler, one half of the hosting duo over at Locked On Clippers here. Coming at you after the Clippers took care of business in Minnesota, 119-112. Kawhi Leonard had a season high of 36 and a fantastic performance that also added 8 boards and 5 assists. Lou Williams put up 27 points off the bench, which was very much needed after a sluggish start that looked like it was going to be disappointing loss territory. Thankfully, the Clippers pulled it out. The momentum's looking good heading into Chicago. Pat Bev looked solid in his return. He looked healthy. So good things ahead, hopefully, for the Clippers after the Chicago game.
Headline for the Clips, Pat Bev back, and they win. The headline on the other side was the return of Karl-Anthony Towns.
Ben Beacon with Locked On Wolves here. The Timberwolves lost tonight to the Clippers by 7 points, but the headline is the return of Karl-Anthony Towns, who missed a month after a positive COVID-19 test. He had 18 points, 10 rebounds, 3 assists in 31 minutes. The Wolves often struggled, though. He only got 15 shots up. Malik Beasley didn't score in the first half, finished with 21, but it was an inefficient 21. The Timberwolves put Josh Okogie and Kawhi Leonard. Kawhi scored a season-high 35, and Okogie brought down the Wolves' offense several pegs. Minnesota was outscored by 13 in the third quarter, and the Clippers essentially played 5-on-4, allowed Okogie to stay open on the perimeter, and he couldn't do anything. And with no D'Angelo Russell, who missed the game with leg soreness, the Wolves just didn't have enough offensive punch this side of Towns and Beasley. Tonight on the Locked On Wolves postgame pod, we'll talk all about the game, of course, as well as Malik Beasley learning to play with Karl Anthony Towns and what this offense might look like when D'Angelo Russell returns. Be sure to subscribe to Locked On Wolves wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, the Clippers are supposed to win that one. They did. The Clippers are really good.
The Clippers are really good. I mean, I was watching this game from Minnesota's perspective, just to see how Karl Anthony Towns looked in that first game back. As that podcaster mentioned, 18-10. You know, he was, actually looking pretty thin and, in shape. You know, I know conditioning was something that he's been working on these last couple of days as he tried to get himself right following his positive COVID test. So it was, I think, a big kind of symbolic, momentous moment for Minnesota to get him back on the court. And they're going to need to stay there if they're going to kind of generate any sort of positive momentum. I didn't think he wasn't in a takeover mode by any stretch, but certainly he gave them an inside punch scoring-wise that they really haven't had. His skill level is still there. You know, he was moving around very well in the half-court offense in certain stretches. So I guess, big takeaway, they were frustrated by how quickly the momentum swung against them in the second half. I mean, the Clippers just kind of turned it up, and that was it. You know, the Timberwolves really couldn't keep up there. But for Minnesota, they're going to want to have Towns and hopefully get Russell back as well and finally see what those two guys can do together. I can't believe, Locke, it's been more than a calendar year since they traded for Russell. Those guys have still barely taken the court together, so now they're finally going to get their look at that duo here pretty soon.
Do you have any reason to believe it'll be any good?
I'm pretty down on Russell, so no, but I think it's going to be their best shot, right? I mean, ultimately, it's sort of like what Dallas was dealing with when they had all those guys in and out of the lineup. It's like you don't really know who you are until you've got your best five guys on the court simultaneously. And so for Minnesota, their hope is their offense is going to be able to perform at a much higher level than it has so far this season. And the only way that's going to happen is if Russell and Towns can develop a really nice two-man game. And everybody else, those role players, can kind of slide in to do what they're expected. You know, it was kind of a rough night as well for an Anthony Edwards. I felt like he was kind of forcing it at certain moments. And again, if you have Russell back and you've got a little bit more structure to your offense where you've got two, whether they're star level or close to star level players, you know, playing off of each other, that should make things easier for everybody, you know, right down the list after those two.
I hope they didn't draft Anthony Edwards because they had D'Angelo Russell and that's why they passed on LaMelo Ball. I hope they legitimately thought Anthony Edwards was better, because if that's the reason, I mean, they're wrong. LaMelo Ball is outstanding, like outstanding. But I'd rather have him be wrong for that than deciding that they couldn't get him because they had D'Angelo Russell.
So for sure, it did seem like probably positional fit played into that decision. I mean, that was kind of my snap take as soon as they won the number one pick. It's like, well, they're probably not going to want to take Ball because his skills overlap too much with Russell's skills and their weaknesses are almost identical as well. And I think you're right. Like the second guessing, if there should be any around LaMelo, I see a lot of it online kind of trending towards Golden State. Like, did they make the wrong decision with Wiseman? I think that you might want to go the other way and say, okay, well, what about Minnesota? You know, ultimately they need a lead playmaker, a guy who can really excite the fan base, get everybody going. And so far, Russell just hasn't been that guy for them. And LaMelo is transforming Charlotte before our eyes.
I'm going to share this. I shouldn't say this publicly, but this is totally the truth. So when we played Charlotte recently, I don't think we've talked since then. It's hard to remember. I don't know if we did. No, because we played them on Friday. So we played Charlotte, and I have not seen Charlotte all year. So what I do as a play-by-play announcer is I watch two or three of their games and call a good deal of them, because you're just not used to who the players are on a team like Charlotte, right? If you're playing the Lakers or the Clippers, you don't have to do that. I'm watching LaMelo. I'd never seen him before. He reminded me of Magic.
Come on now.
Now let me explain this. When Magic was 19, or he was not actually in the NBA, or 20, the part of his game that reminded me of him was the length of his passes. That he single-handedly changed the tempo of the game with his existence. There are very few players in this game that are able to do that skill. I'm not saying he'll go down as one of the 10 greatest players or 15 of all time, wherever Magic is on the list. But that skill to be able to throw true bounce passes that are 35 feet long, to push ahead, to single-handedly change the tempo of the game with your existence, is really special. He's 19 years old, and he has it.
He knows how to weight the passes. He's got great touch. He can kind of put some, you know, spin or some mustard on some of those passes as well. I mean, he's unbelievable in transition. But let's just remember, this is kind of like one of my personal things. Like, Magic was awesome. He was about more than just those highlight reel passes. He proved it. He was a winner at every single level, high school, college, the pros. I don't want to put that kind of pressure on any person, let alone LaMelo, after 10 or 15 games. So I will continue to be, like, pleasantly surprised by the LaMelo experience, and I will continue to push back at any Magic Johnson comparisons.
Well, that's not quite what it was. Let's be perfectly clear. There was a skill set that reminded me of him that is a very unique. Now, by the way, you really want to freak yourself out. Go put the, go do the whole little fun thing where you, you do the same age or similar career and put them next to each other. It's like the exact same on Basketball Reference Stathead, just to really freak you out.
Oh boy. Well, look, I'm glad that he's getting bigger minutes, you know, because they did kind of work him in to start. I think the situation's kind of broke his way in terms of other guys missing time. He has absolutely made the most of it. And I do think he's one of these guys where, you know, it's going to be nightly highlights from him, you know, for the next 5 or 10 years. Just, like, get ready for it, you know. And by the end of it, like, his rookie year mixtape for YouTube, that thing is going to be, like, 14 minutes long. You know, it's if somebody's tracking these plays, they're going to have a lot of material to work with.
Just a little side note. It's a weird note on him right now that I'll just throw out there. Like, because of their injury situation, he's actually only played with one other group of five players for 100 possessions. Like, I've never seen anything like it when I prepped for them last Friday. Like, I was trying to figure out lineups and who he played. He's actually had to play with Bismack Biyombo a tremendous amount. They're totally terrible whenever he's on the floor with Bismack Biyombo. Because Bismack Biyombo probably, you know, he, like, forgot thumbs on his way to the basketball floor. So it's actually just a really interesting thing that he hasn't had any group he's played with because they've been so injured. All right, let's go to the Lakers. I don't know how we got there. Charlotte lost tonight, by the way, to Memphis. We'll get Sean Coleman to give you the Memphis take here in a little bit. Anything left on the Clippers? I don't think, unless you want to add something, but the Lakers go to overtime for the third straight time, and they do beat the Thunder without Anthony Davis, but that was tight. And Lou Dort, man, go-to guy late in the game, Lou Dort.
No, Lou Dort was everywhere, all over the place. You know, one of my things that we've been talking about on podcasts recently is just the power of width. You know, if you do have those broad shoulders and that thick chest, that can really come in handy. And Lou Dort is like the poster child of that. There's no question. You saw him, you know, really contesting LeBron hard on the Lakers' last offensive possession, forcing him to settle. You don't really see LeBron kind of step away from a challenge like that. Lou Dort's got his hands in his face as he's pressed up as close as he possibly can be. But also offensively, I mean, everybody knows Lou Dort can't shoot, but he was still finding his way to the basket time after time, trucking guys. I think he got Wesley Matthews just kind of bowled over him one time going towards the basket. It's a really, really fun experience to watch Lou Dort. I mean, ultimately, it was a little bit sad from Oklahoma City's part because they had every opportunity to win this game. I thought in part because the Lakers' defensive structure just looks so different without Anthony Davis out there. I mean, they were giving up a lot of soft buckets, even into the fourth quarter. You know, sometimes the Lakers will flip the switch, you know, when they're playing against younger or less experienced teams and just kind of take over down the stretch. And they thought they were doing that tonight, but they just couldn't get the stops to do it on the defensive end. But on the very last play, you know, Oklahoma City just kind of screwed it up. They got a stop. They got the rebound. Instead of immediately calling timeout, they advanced the ball a little bit. So by the time they called timeout, they got stuck into the backcourt. On the inbounds play, for whatever reason, they're inbounding to Al Horford 70 feet from the hoop. Tell me how that makes sense. LeBron jumps the pass, deflects it, and the Lakers hang on for a one-point game. I just think the coach probably wants to have that final sequence back. I'm sure the players wish they had called timeout so they could have advanced and at least had one final crack at it. But really, really fun game. The Thunder are not the kind of team that you want to overlook or just, you know, play half-heartedly against. They only had 8 guys tonight for various reasons because of health protocols and injuries, and yet those guys all stepped up and played quite well.
6 straight for the Lakers now. LeBron has played 46, 43, and 41 minutes in the last 3 games because they've gone to overtime in every game.
I know. They got to finish these things off in regulation. I do think that's probably going to be Frank Vogel's message here. You know, it's like, come on, guys. Like, I understand that we're trying to pace ourselves within games and, you know, we're trying to just, you know, slam the door shut when we get the opportunity in the fourth quarter. But let's slam it a little bit harder. It's kind of crazy that LeBron's playing these many minutes. It's also amazing to me that they haven't giving him nights off or strategically rested him or find ways to kind of ramp him up. It seems like it's almost his decision that he wants to be out there every single night. He hasn't missed a single game all year. And when this whole idea about the All-Star came up, and he's saying, well, look, I was kind of counting on a 5-day break during the midseason break rather than going to Atlanta. It's like, well, yeah, I mean, there are other ways you could try to work in some rest here. I mean, this is kind of a strategic thing that you and the Lakers are doing. You might want to rethink it, because playing basketball for 6 months straight heading into the playoffs might not be the best idea.
LeBron in the month of February, it's only been 5 games, 27 points, 9 rebounds, 11 assists, a block and 2 steals. He's not shooting the three great, but he's shooting 52% overall. He's just incredible. I mean, he hit the big three tonight, like in the fourth quarter, he buries a three.
Does he want the MVP? Is that what's happening? I mean, is that why he's playing all these minutes and never taking a night off? He's trying to send a message to the voters?
I mean, I think he's just got to be, I'm sure he's got his own little motivation somewhere. Like, you can't do what he's been doing for so long without some, I don't want to call it screw loose, but some uniqueness to who you are that drives you in this way. So there's something, he's driven on his own self-motivation, whatever that might be, in a unique manner that we've rarely seen and we should cherish.
Yeah, no, I'm with you for sure. And he was picking up some important defensive assignments late in that game as well, switching over to Horford when Horford had it going, in other different situations. But, their defense, I really think this game showed the value of Anthony Davis. When you have Montrezl Harrell out there as your defensive five in crunch time situations, and you're trying to get by with him and say Morris or him and Kuzma, it's like an automatic green light for the opposition to just drive straight at the basket. And OKC was not hesitating. They were doing that, and they were finding all sorts of good stuff when they did. So I think this is probably one where LeBron's tired after the game, and he's also calling AD, and he's like, hey, AD, how you feeling? Can we get you back out there anytime soon?
These are with the amount of games teams are playing in such a short turnaround, the impact of these injuries is a little different than it's been before. It's a trickle-down effect, right? So it's not that Mike Conley is hurt for the Jazz. It's that Joe Ingles now had to play 34 minutes. It's not that Joe Ingles played 34 minutes. It's that Joe Ingles is going to play 34 minutes in 3 games in 4 days or 5 days because of this schedule. It's not that Anthony Davis is hurt so that LeBron James has to play 40. It's he's played 40 in 3 straight in a short period of time. That's where the lingering after effect these injuries are going to have on teams is that it's just such a burden, but you sprain an ankle and you miss a week, you miss 4 or 5 games because the season's truncated.
Well, exactly. Or look at the Kevin Durant situation in Brooklyn. I mean, he's frustrated because this is his second week that he's had to miss because of contact tracing. And in a normal season, you might think, okay, well, that's probably what, 2, maybe 3 games. And for the Nets, it's going to wind up being even more than that. And certainly the first time it was as well. So I think that's one reason, going back to that Nets Pacers game, that Brooklyn fans should be so happy they took care of business in that one, is because any win they get without KD is a very valuable win right now.
Locked On Bets is our new podcast, 15-minute run through the best games to play on that nightly. Sterling is your handicapper. Your boy Q is the host. It's super fun, and it's brought to you by betonline.ag, the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Football may be over, but the NBA, college basketball, and the NHL are in full swing. BetOnline even covers awards, TV shows, reality TV shows. They do a great job of updating their odds in real time, props on anything you can imagine. They cover all the news, scores, and odds, and it's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. But even better, if you head to betonline.ag or use your mobile device today, you receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit with the promo code Locked On. That's a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit with the promo code Locked On. BetOnline, your online sports book experts. You may have read about it in the New York Times and Style Magazine or Forbes. You've probably seen it by now, and we're excited to tell you about it. It's 1010. 1010 is an exclusive collection of 10 one-of-a-kind engagement rings designed by 10 of the most distinctive designers working today. Using only diamonds responsibly sourced from Botswana, 10 design masters have each provided a uniquely beautiful commitment ring. They're available now exclusively at BlueNile.com, and when they're gone, they're gone. We all know that the diamond engagement ring is iconic. It's a timeless expression of the deepest commitment between two people. And with 1010, It's been beautifully re-envisioned in the hands of 10 modern designers working exclusively with sustainable sourced diamonds. If you're ready to mark a special commitment or looking for a unique and meaningful way to celebrate Valentine's Day, you're definitely going to want to check this out. Again, this exciting limited edition collection of diamond engagement rings is now available exclusively at BlueNile.com. All right, I mentioned the Dallas Mavericks and the Atlanta Hawks had kind of a crazy finish tonight. First, let's start on the winning side of this one and hear from Nick Angstead, the host of Locked On Mavericks.
Nick Angstead from the Locked On Mavericks podcast here. The Dallas Mavericks get the win over the Atlanta Hawks. And the big story of this one is Luka Doncic got another triple-double, but it was Tim Hardaway Jr. and Jalen Brunson that came up big at the end of the game. Tim Hardaway Jr. went on a 7-0 run himself to cut the lead to 2 at the beginning of the fourth quarter. They just absolutely took over the game. And Luka and Trey barely scored in the second half. It was a strange game for one that's billed as Luka versus Trey Young, this big battle of the 2018 draft picks. And Kristaps Porzingis, Josh Richardson didn't get a lot of play down the stretch. Porzingis even barely played in the fourth quarter, mostly because of foul trouble, but he's also held out of all the final plays. A lot to look forward to. We'll be talking about it on the Locked On Mavericks podcast.
Jalen Brunson scored 9 straight points at one point while being guarded by Trey Young, which is an ongoing problem in Atlanta. Let's hear what Brad Rowland, Locked On Hawks, had to say.
Hello, friends. My name is Brad Rowland, and the Atlanta Hawks fell to the Dallas Mavericks this evening in Dallas by a final score of 118 to 117. A back-and-forth game. The Hawks played reasonably well throughout the contest. The Mavericks got very, very hot in the fourth quarter, making their first 6 three-point attempts, and that proved to be the difference. The Hawks just could not generate stops in the fourth quarter. Jalen Brunson and Tim Hardaway Jr. went kind of crazy on Atlanta, and that ended up being the difference in the game. The Hawks did have a shot in the air on the final possession of the game. Danilo Gallinari going to his left, fading away. A difficult shot, not maybe the one you want, but not one that he's incapable of making. Still, there was some controversy on the final play. Trey Young was incensed. He did not get a foul call on the last play, setting a screen. He was run over by Willie Cauley-Stein. There was a shot to his face, and he let the ref know about it immediately afterwards. It's about as mad as you'll ever see Trey Young get. And then there was also a potential chance, I will say, to lob the ball. Kevin Herter could have found John Collins streaking towards the rim, but ended up in Gallinari's hands, and that was the end of that. The Hawks, again, played reasonably well in this game. Not what you want to lose by one point, but they covered the spread, if that makes any difference to you. They were close, and they were hanging around here, and some positives and some negatives to this game. I thought Collins was brilliant, for instance. I thought Kevin Herter was very good. Trey had some very nice moments as well on the more negative side. Clint Capella struggled in this game. Gallinari did not shoot the ball well, etc. So more to come on this one, but the Hawks will have the day off on Thursday before they take on a back-to-back at home on Friday and Saturday. So stay tuned for that.
That's Brad Rowland of Locked On Hawks. Trey Young was incensed is an understatement. He really went after the official on the final play. He said afterwards he was mad because the final play was for him and he didn't get the ball and he wanted the ball, Ben.
Well, that doesn't surprise me. He does seem to like to have the ball. It was an interesting situation. First of all, he should be fined for his reaction. I mean, that was really over the top, right in the referee's face. It looked like some pretty obvious profanities, if my lip reading is good at all. So I think there should probably be some sort of a fine coming in that situation. I'm curious what you thought. First of all, did you think he was fouled? I mean, to me, there was contact, but it did look like he was leaning back at least a little bit. I didn't necessarily know in that situation if you're going to get that call. And if the play design is for him, I understand sometimes having a guy screen and then pop out gets him open. But you know, from a size standpoint, Trey Young is going to be taking contact. And, you know, I just wonder, was that the right guy to have as your screener in that situation? Or should you have tried to get him the ball in a different way? You know, I don't know. Do you have thoughts on either one of those questions?
The advantage of having him be the screener is if they switch and they're switching all screens, then he can pop out and he gets this, you know, he's probably got a mismatch to start with the basketball in limited time. And so that would be the advantage. That's why you'd have him set a screen and then come to the ball. So I'm not sure that I have a problem with that. I actually have always been kind of impressed with some of the stuff Lloyd Pierce does in those circumstances. So I generally would kind of give him the benefit of the doubt. I did think that, you know, the Mavericks in the fourth quarter going at Trey Young with Jalen Brunson on virtually like every play for a while was a pretty big story. Like, I love Trey Young. I'm kind of in the bag for what he does offensively with his size. And like, he leads the league of guards and passes from the paint to three. He leads, was like one of the leaders in the league and passes paint to paint. Like, it's incredible what he's able to do. He showed it again tonight with 15 assists. So don't misunderstand. This isn't some like Trae Young hate game here. I'm a fan, but like, you've got to be able to guard your yard a little. Like, if you can't guard your yard, like, if Jalen Brunson is taking you, no offense to Jalen Brunson, but Jalen Brunson shouldn't be taking guys.
No, I'm with you. It was a strange game because the centers didn't actually play that much. I mean, the one podcaster mentioned Porzingis had pretty limited minutes, and it was the same deal for Capella. Both those guys had some foul trouble at various points. And so that just exacerbates that problem, right? When you've got a whole bunch of smalls on the court, a whole bunch of guys who want to play on the perimeter, that means that everybody who's getting broken down one-on-one doesn't really have the help on the backside, and lots of good stuff can happen. And unfortunately for Trey, he does have trouble staying in front of guys. They will go by him. And once, you know, once they get a step, it's basically over. He can't recover to block a shot. He's not going to be able to get a steal. So, you know, he's going to need to have those guys behind him. And just the way this game played out strategically, they didn't have that back line to kind of protect him, and it definitely showed. I thought this was an incredibly frustrating loss from Atlanta's perspective. They had control of the game for a lot of it. Dallas just got absolutely red hot and just kept coming and kept coming and kept coming, and Atlanta just could not get a stop to break up their momentum whatsoever. You're mentioning Brunson, but Hardaway Jr. also had his own little run. It seemed like almost everybody who was on the court in the fourth quarter had it going for Dallas. And they wind up, you know, just kind of, you know, stealing one, frankly. I mean, I thought all things considered, that was a game the Hawks should have won.
Dallas's fourth quarter shooting, 15 of 22 and 7 of 9 from 3.
That's what I'm saying. Wide open shots, and they just could not miss.
Well, I think it's a huge win for Dallas. I mean, they've been trying to find their footing and figure out where they are and what they're – and if they drop, you know, they were down by 15 to Atlanta. Like, at one point, kind of all their steps forward looked opposite. For them to be able to close that out, whether it's just that they got hot shooting, I think it's a big, big game for Dallas.
It is. The second time this week, you know, they haven't been a team that's been very good in the clutch. And frankly, both of their clutch wins this week were, you know, pretty sketchy. Like, I mean, they almost blew it against Golden State on Saturday. I'm sure you saw that one basically came down to the final possession and, you know, just a crazy game. You know, Maxi Kleber has a foul on one end, then he kind of hits a dagger three on the other end. And here they were able to put it away as well. So I do think it's a momentum building victory for the Mavericks, like you're describing. And they were really preaching, look, we've got to get our chemistry together after they got Porzingis back from the injury and after they got a whole bunch of guys back from the COVID protocols. And I think they're starting to get that. I believe it's their third straight win overall. I would imagine that might be the first time they've done that all season. And I do think it's, you know, I think that the worst of their season is behind them, knock on wood. I mean, they had a lot of problems with guys, lineup availability, lineup continuity, and all that sort of things. It does seem like they've turned the corner.
Final question for you tonight. I think we've generally Denver blew out Cleveland. We mentioned Chicago set an all-time record for threes. They beat New Orleans 129-116. Washington still plays in the league. They lost to Toronto 137-115. So I think we got all of them. Give me how many teams are in your top tier in the Eastern Conference, teams that could win the Eastern Conference, really legitimately win it. How many teams do you have in that tier?
In the top tier right now, I would go Brooklyn, Milwaukee, Philly. Not necessarily in that order, but I feel like it's those three. And I would have the Celtics in the second tier.
And it's interesting. I'm not sure I totally have Philly there. That's Philly's 11-1 in games that are within five in the final 5 minutes. I just think they've gotten lucky. I'm just not all there.
Yeah, yet. I don't trust their closing stuff either. I mean, if Tobias Harris is going to be one of your main guys, or Embiid, you know, fourth quarter of high intensity playoff games, is his decision making going to be there? Is his dominance going to be there? I think those are fair questions, but they've blown away my expectations so far this year. So I'm going to at least grant it to them for now. So how many do you have? Just two?
I have Brooklyn and Milwaukee right now. Philadelphia has not convinced me yet. How about the West?
I would still say my top tier is probably the two LA teams with Utah making a strong push. I think past that, you've got a big gap.
He's Ben Golliver. I'm David Locke. Follow him at the Washington Post. You can go to his Twitter account at Ben Golliver, and you can check out and get his weekly newsletter, which is worth getting. It's very, very good. So make sure you check that out. I'm David Locke. You can catch me on Locked On Jazz. We also have Locked On Today for you. And Sean Coleman's listening right now saying, you said you were going to me. Sean, I still love you. I haven't forgotten about the Memphis Grizzlies. I'm a small market guy. I'm not going to forget about someone like the Memphis Grizzlies. Here's Sean Coleman about the Grizzlies' big win.
Games like this are a lot more fun to be able to do the Locked On Now videos afterwards. The Grizzlies tonight with a very impressive victory, snapping a four-game winning streak. Overall, just an in-sync fun game. There just seemed to be an extra bit of energy both on the court and enjoyment during timeouts, at during breaks in the game. This team just seemed to be once again having fun, and it really showed out tonight on the court. A franchise record, 23 three-pointers tonight for one of the teams that over the past two decades has been one of the worst three-point shooting teams in the NBA. But even more impressive than that, 19 offensive rebounds, five players who hit three or more threes, eight players who had multiple assists, seven players who had double-digit points. Another game where the Grizzlies, snapping this four-game winning streak, got back to what put them on a seven-game winning streak before. Contributions from all over the place. Everybody looked in sync, even with Ja Morant still struggling to shoot. The passing, just the cohesiveness, the chemistry was certainly there as well. It was very fun watching this team tonight and just remind you of how enjoyable it is right now to be a Grizzlies fan, and that will only get better as our better talents return. We'll have this and much more, breaking down a historic night and a much needed win for the Grizzlies on the Locked On Grizzlies podcast.
Ben Golliver, I leave you with this thought. Go live your next days, enjoying them as much as Sean Coleman enjoys his Grizzlies.
Well, he should. That's a fun team. You know, they don't win every night, but they always put on a show. Even their empty arenas look pretty awesome to go to. Of all the teams that are still doing the game ops well with, you know, 2,000 fans in attendance, I would put Memphis right at the top of the power rankings.
They've always been the top of the power rankings for game ops. These Ben Golliver. I'm still David Locke. Have a great day. Now tell your smart device to play the most recent episode of podcast Locked On today.